Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. This is a conversation we're calling Purposes and Preferences. It's a moment for us to wonder at our own preferences and to uncover the purposes they reflect. In this episode, Greg Meyer helps us start exploring those purposes to see if your preference is actually as good a deal as it seems, both for you and the broader fabric.
Welcome, Fabric. Wow, it is good to be back. I'm Greg, and I was away on sabbatical for 3 months and am just back. And so thank you for that, by the way. It was great. It was fun. It was probably most importantly, it was restorative for both of us, Chris and I. So we just both thank you. It was a wonderful experience. But your vacation for me is over. Yeah, and we do have some stuff to dive into today as a community, because I think that what we're going to be talking about today in these next couple of weeks are really core to what it means to be community and why we are community here. So we want to be doing that. And I think that's all the more important. You know, it's fall, right? People are kind of rebooting their schedules, figuring things out. Like, what are you going to be committed to? What are your priorities going to be in this upcoming school year? Even if you don't have school-age kids, I think we still all get in that kind of groove. And then also, as we re-emerge from sort of from this endemic pandemic that we are in, I think, again, to make conscious choices, things aren't the same as they were before. We know that. We all know that. So what do we want to be about? What are we really about? And let's make some really good choices around that. So we're talking about this as purposes and preferences, okay? Purposes and preferences. Most of us know what we like and what we don't like. What we're not so clear about is what really matters. What is most important to our lives and what isn't. We've got our preferences squared away. We're a little foggier on our purposes. And I think that tends to be pretty much true for all of us. Certainly is for me, too. Now, that may not seem like a real big deal for you because you think, well, most of my preferences don't really matter. I mean, that's kind of innocuous, right? I mean, chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream, you know. Fall or spring, as Jesse was talking about it? Is it hiking or biking? Is it purple or orange? Is it Vikings or Packers? No, that one actually matters. It's all that kind of stuff that, you know, it's really just what's most pleasing to me, and it doesn't really affect anyone else, you know. But the thing is that that's just the very tip of the preference iceberg. You guys all know that preference iceberg, right? We have all these preferences that really only affect me. So, not a big deal. I can do what I want to do with them. But we don't realize that there's a lot more than that to this preference iceberg. You know, so what are preferences? You know, you have to excuse, this is a really overly technical definition. But your preferences are the way you like things to be. Now, under the surface of those preferences are some other things, right? There's some things that aren't so obvious. They're not so clear to us and probably to other people either. And in that place, we're making decisions according to what is easier, what's more convenient, as well as a bunch of other things. And they seem innocent enough to us, except we tend to be missing something. Like, for instance, we start thinking about, you know, what is easier, what you think about what's easier for you, but you don't consider at what cost. Or this is easier for you, but how does it really impact other people? You know, we miss that kind of stuff. And this is where it starts getting messy. And you knew I'd go there, didn't you? It always gets messy. And here I'm only 2 minutes in and I already got to messy. Because, I mean, why would we talk about this sort of stuff if it didn't get messy, right? If we all had it figured out, we'd shelve that and we'd talk about something else that was messy. And this is a messy thing. And it needs us to spend some time thinking about it, you know, working out the different parts about it. So we all have these messy preferences. I did a little poll with some people, and I got these. I would prefer lower gas prices. I would prefer like fewer annoying people. More freedom in my job. Turner, did he leave? I think this might have been his. Less homework. To not stop at stop signs. I would prefer that. To have my opinions more widely accepted. We all have these preferences. And the point of them isn't that they are right or wrong, is it? No, the point is, what else is impacted by my preferences, right? Asking that question. And that is where purposes come in. Purposes are the way or the why behind your preference? What is the purpose behind your preference? What really matters to you that's driving your choice, your leaning, your wants, your desires? Those purposes are important. Now, I should note here that when I'm talking about purposes, I know where some people go, all right? I am not talking about this ultimate purpose in life that God gave you before you were born and is telling you what you should do and who you should be. Now, you know, I frankly don't think that's how things work or that actually even makes a lot of sense. I'm talking about purposes in a much simpler sort of way. Being this, you know, the foundation, the grounding of the things that we do. What is the purpose behind it for what we like and what we don't like? They are the groundings for our preferences. Now, preferences that are ungrounded, like things that are simply a matter of habit, right? Like, it's just my habit to spend time with people just like myself. Or maybe they're a cultural norm, and that's why I've inherited them, and I repeat them without question. Like, I want to be able to get in my car and go anywhere I want, anytime I want, because that's what people do, right? When we have those kinds of preferences in our lives, those ungrounded preferences, they are a problem. In fact, they can be dangerous. They can be dangerous to you. They can be dangerous to the world. They can be dangerous to us. See, here's the thing, and this is sort of the title for this week, if you notice it. We think our preferences provide us with the best deal. If I get what I want, that's the best deal, right? Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. It isn't the preference that decides whether it's a good deal for you or not. It's the purpose behind it that determines whether you are getting a good deal or not. Now, in case you think I'm making too much of this preferences and purposes stuff, I think it's interesting that the Bible thinks it's a really big deal, okay? And in fact, it's not just the Bible. I mean, any sacred tradition that I can think of that I've kind of worked through, as well as other places where we see things that we would maybe consider the Word of God, you know, leaking through or shining through, or this, you know, deep kind of wisdom traditions, all of them seem to be focusing with different kinds of language and different kinds of approaches on this same issue. So as I was thinking about this purposes and preferences stuff over the last couple of months, a couple of stories from Jesus' life like popped in my head right away. So I went and read them, and then that's, well, that reminds me of this one, and that one too, and that led me to more. And then I realized it's not just Jesus that kind of keeps having this thing, but it's like one of the major themes behind the whole Bible. It's basically, you know, what is the why behind our purposes? Or as I would maybe put it, like, it's trying to tell us the world is what it is, not what you would like it to be, what you want it to be. And that isn't a bitter pill to swallow. That isn't something you just, oh, I have to, you know what, self-renunciation and accept what the world, you know, what God is asking me to do. It's like, this is where you actually find freedom, because it is the way the world works. And when you align yourself with that, when you start, you know, getting those really enduring purposes and let them enliven your preferences, you finally start finding, this is actually where I find my happiness. This is where meaning, this is where fulfillment start occurring for me. That's where the joy is. That's when we truly get a good deal. Anyway, let me give you an example. Matthew, one of the gospel writers, these are the guys who, you know, wrote these books, accounts of the life of Jesus so that they could try to share with other people what they thought this guy was really all about. Anyway, he was very deliberate as a writer and arranged his stories and the way he told them in order to, like, you know, make particular points and things like that. And one of the really big issues for him was what we're talking about today. In fact, he set up a bunch of stories in a row to juxtapose this exact point, this idea of, you know, the difference, the juxtaposition of what people want and what our lives are actually about. And these stories take place in the part of his gospel where Jesus' life has sort of come to a climax. I mean, it's really clear what he's about and what he's up to. And it is receiving the inevitable reaction, especially from the power holders, who say, nah, that's not really in our favor. This isn't what we want. This isn't what we've invested so much time and energy to create a system that's good for us. And you're kind of undoing it with this world that you're introducing us to. They'd prefer that the world that they'd set up was left alone, right? And not the story, the one that Jesus was set up. So Anyway, so there's a series of stories, and let me just run you through them real fast, okay? First story, and this is in the middle of chapter 19. You can, they're on that Sunday paper. You can go and read through them yourself during the week here. But middle of chapter 19, there's a rich young man comes up to Jesus and seemingly very sincerely asks Jesus, what do I have to do to be a part of this life that you've been talking about? Because I'm really interested in Jesus as well. You know the commandments. I mean, this is like God telling you what life should be about. And then just remember, they should love your neighbor as you love yourself. And the guy says, that's fantastic. I mean, that's what I've tried to do all my life, and that's what I want to be. So Jesus, fantastic. Okay, so go sell all your possessions and give it to the poor so you can come and follow me. And the Bible says, he's grieved. I mean, this guy is stunned. You want me to do what? Like, can't I have my cake and eat it too? I mean, I really want to be about that kind of life, but I really want my possessions. And, you know, what was the real purpose behind there for you? All that then culminating where Jesus shares this wonderful little line that you've probably heard when he's talking to his disciples afterwards. And he says, you know, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. Now, he's not talking about going to heaven here. He's talking about the kingdom of God for Jesus is this place where people understand how God, you know, how the world is put together, that which is has woven this fabric that we are all a part of and lets their life be aligned with it, right? And he says, there's nothing that makes it harder to do that. Well, few things that make it harder to do that than all these material possessions that want to derail our purposes and create false preferences among us. Anyway, next scene, chapter 20 starts, okay? Jesus tells a story. This is the parable of a vineyard and the owner of the vineyard who goes to the marketplace early in the morning to get workers for his vineyard, right? And so he tells them what he's going to pay them. They get on the company bus. They go out to the vineyard, and they start working. And he goes back in the middle of the morning, and he hires another bunch to the same thing, tells them what he's going to pay them for the day. Then he goes back at noon, and he does it. Then he goes back in the, like 1 hour before the workday is over, and he hires another bunch, puts them on the company bus, sends them to the field, and they work. And then that hour is up, and it's quitting time, and everybody comes, and he gives them all a day's wage. And you can just imagine how happy the ones that were there since early in the morning felt about that. Yeah, right? Yeah. So this was not a parable about labor economics. This was a parable about the economics of God's kingdom. Remember how I described it before, like how God envisions this world. And it's really a lot different, all right? What else, Jesus is saying, what else could you prefer than every person gets what they need to be whole? Why do you need more? And then Jesus, I can imagine, is hearing the person who comes to him and says, well, that's fine, Jesus, but tomorrow I'm going to get on the last bus because that sounds a lot easier. And then Jesus looks at that person, which is probably me, with that look that says, I see all of you, and I know who you are. And he says, Greg, that's the bus you've always been on. That's who you are in this story. You aren't the one that was on early. And it's okay. I mean, everything I have is yours. I only want you to be part of what I'm doing. Some purposes are so big that they rewire what we want, and they rewire what we think we deserve. It is good. Okay, third scene. Jesus gathers his disciples. That's his closest group of followers. And he tells them that he's going to be, they're going into Jerusalem, they're outside the gates. He says, we're going to go into town here, and I'm going to get arrested, beaten, and killed, and then I'll rise again. What does that have to do with purposes and preferences? Well, I'm pretty sure that wasn't Jesus' preference, right? But he knew why he was going to town. He knew his why. He knew the purpose. And he was doing it for people. He was making a stand that would, instead of separating people from that which is, could begin to draw them back to it. And he would prefer to do that with his life than to stand down or to walk away. Dramatic example of it, but hey, that's Jesus, right? Then there's the last in the string, okay? This is mid-chapter 20. You may know this story too. It's the mother of two disciples, James and John. And she comes to Jesus with her boys in tow, and she kneels before them to ask a favor. And Jesus says, and these words I think are important, "What do you want?" And so she tells him. She says, "I want my sons to be at your right hand and your left hand when you establish your kingdom." Gutsy move on her part, you know. She knows things are coming close, and she doesn't want her boys, like, she wants her boys to, you know what, be the new power brokers when the old power brokers are, you know, pushed aside, not just some, what, you know, mid-level management civil servants. You know, so you better speak soon before those positions are already filled, right? And Jesus' reply to her is, "You have no idea what you're asking." And by the way, the Jerusalem Post that day said that was the understatement of the year. You have no idea what you're asking. I mean, he's shaking his head in disbelief, I'm sure, trying to tell them that he doesn't pick those kinds of things, and that's not how it works. He tells them, who plays those roles? And there's a quote, "Who plays those roles is not for me to decide, but has been prepared by my Father," which is a very first century Hebrew way of saying, you don't find your place in the kingdom of heaven, in the fabric of the universe, by wanting it, but by how you are woven into it. It isn't preferencing. It's a your purpose in it thing. Then, as if to rub it in all the more that his disciples did not understand this, you know, I want it to be the way I like it, and I want my preference to be realized. The disciples would get all angry when they find out that, you know, there was this bid, this power grab going on behind the scenes, and they might lose out on it. And so they're all mad at James and John and his mom, their mom. And so then Jesus lays out his purposes before preferences thing as clearly as he can to all of them. And he says, the world plays that game, I know, but we don't. Whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave. Just like I came, not to be served, but to serve. Not to be served, but to serve. Who'd think that that would actually be the best deal? Check your preferences. What are the purposes behind them? Are they what you really want? Your ungrounded preferences are dangerous to you and to us as a world, as a community, as fabric. It's the same with mine, with everyone else's. When we inflict what we want on each other, unaware of the cost or the impact it has, our wishes have on other people, we begin to fray the fabric that holds us together and in which we find life. Two words about that I want you to remember. Short-term and short-sighted. Some of you are going to say that's four words. I looked it up. Short-term and short-sighted, both considered single words, even with a hyphen, okay? So just before I start getting letters in the mail. All right. First one, short-term. As human beings, we tend towards instant gratification, and we decide if something is a good deal or not by what it provides us right now. We like to shop when we feel down, when we, you know, depressed. When someone upsets us, we want to unleash our anger on them right now because it feels so good right now. Short term. The other one is that we're short-sighted. In our excitement for what we want so badly, we miss the implication of the implication of the implication of our choices and our actions. Developing and burning all of the world's fossil fuel supplies was a really good idea for a while, but it missed some of that short-sightedness. So, to be part of the kingdom of God, to be a part of what that which is, you know, what's woven into this fabric of the universe that we're all part of and integrated with, means to think long-term and to be long-sighted. To think long-term and to live long-sighted. When we love God, love Yahweh, I am who I am, which is the name of God in the Bible. When we love I am who I am, that, you know, fabric of the universe, when we do that, we are delving into the timeless, not just the now, not just the short term, not just what I can see, you know, right out my windshield right now, but we're delving into the timeless. When we love our neighbors as ourselves, we're choosing what we do by how it impacts our neighbors, how it impacts others, not just ourselves, because we are in this together. Now, does that make sense to you? I mean, do you realize some of the conflicts that you have going on in your life with that? I mean, I sure do. Can you see how some of the ways that you prefer things to be good for you but are maybe not so good for the world? Can you see how the things that you like or want are, in truth, maybe sometimes not even good for you? I mean, remember that preference iceberg. Many of those hidden below the surface things that you may not really be aware of, you know, some of those preferences and how they are conflicting with your consciously acknowledged values or purposes. For instance, I may not want to be a racist, I may think I'm not racist, but yet I have to admit, I prefer to shop, spend time in, live in places that are filled with people predominantly like me. I may say that I really want to help stop climate change, but I find when it comes to making decisions that are consistent with that purpose, I often fault on the side of price over responsibility, or, you know, what's easier for me versus what is more inconvenient for me to do. Now, on the back of your Sunday paper on your outline, you're going to find a box in this bottom corner that I'd like you to spend a couple minutes with, right? I want to give you a couple minutes to start a list of some preferences to consider. That's what it's labeled. What are some preferences in my life to consider? You don't have to weigh judgment. You don't have to figure them all out, but let them come up. Now, it might be a little hard to come up with that list. I find when I'm thinking about this and I live, they keep popping up like all over the place. When I just try to make a list, it might be a little harder. But I would suggest start with the easy stuff. Like, I prefer this kind of movie over that kind of movie. Or I like this kind of food more than that kind of food. And then maybe, you know, walk it into I prefer listening to thinking, or vice versa, or I prefer being alone versus being with other people, or I prefer evading conflict rather than having. You may not have thought about it before, but in one way, Fabric's job is to save you from your preferences, right? It's to help you connect your purposes, your preferences, to your purposes. And not to dictate what your purposes are. No, that's something that you've got to figure out. But we can be a community that's, what, mutually supportive and thinking about those, learning from each other, trying them, and figuring it out. It doesn't happen all at once. It's a long-term project for all of us. So we'll be exploring some aspects of how these purposes and preferences questions are important to us as a community here in Fabric. And I've kind of been trying to just introduce the whole overall concept, but I want to talk about a very particular way that this purposes and preferences thing is true for us as a community. And that first piece that I want to talk about today is really so simple, and it is simply that you are Fabric. Even if it's your first time here, you're Fabric today because you're here. You're woven into this community today. I mean, it really is so true, and it is probably the most core expression of the DNA of this community. This fact that we are Fabric. It doesn't exist on its own. You are Fabric and so am I. This building is not Fabric. This is Field Community School, and we gather in it sometimes as Fabric, right? And that's really a significant point. Fabric isn't an hour or so on Sunday mornings or the group you happen to belong to. No, Fabric is us. It isn't an organization you belong to. It's an expression of our being together as community. Without us, there is no Fabric. Okay? It's not a church building that got left over. You know? That's it. That's why we feel a little bit crunchy about talking about us as a church. It's because, unlike the way most people perceive and talk about church these days, we aren't the kind of church you have. We're the kind of church you are. Right? And that really is pretty countercultural, I have to say. Most churches are institutions that exist on their own, and they use people to keep them open and keep them going. Not necessarily what they want, but it is what they have become. It's the institutionalization of this movement that we try to be about. They belong by believing the way everyone else does there and then behaving according to certain social and traditional ways that people at that church do. And then when they believe and behave the right stuff, then they're allowed to belong. With Fabric, you just belong. That's it, right? If you're here, you belong. If you believe in God, you belong. If you don't believe in God, you belong. If you think it's a bad question, you belong. Right? If you are straight or gay, trans, employed, unemployed, self-employed, underemployed, you belong, right? If you're partnered, single, young, old, you belong. Previous churchgoer, previous evangelical, current evangelical, mainliner or not, you belong. The sponsors at the very first baptism that ever happened here with Fabric 16 years ago were Jewish. No one flinched. Of course that made sense. You know, what's the issue? That's it. We are here, and you are here for us. George with this little jazz trio here. By the way, did I tell you the difference, or what you call a drummer who broke up with his girlfriend? I threatened him that I would tell this. Homeless. But the George with his ensemble here, he said, well, that's not regular church stuff. What do you mean, regular church stuff? George is Fabric. This is something he does from the heart of his being. He is an amazing musician, as these guys are. And they're providing something that gives us a space to think and to contemplate into. I mean, how is that not part of the fabric we are all woven into? And how would that not be a great thing for us to spend some time with today? I mean, thank you for being Fabric. You wove us tighter than we were before. That's how it works here. And this idea that we are here for you, and you belong, and that you are here for us so that we can belong, I mean, that's where it starts getting tricky, right? When we are all fabric, there is this powerful and this dynamic reciprocity going on. And that means that everything is flowing between us in both directions all the time. And that flows against the predominant cultural idea of being a consumer. Right? A consumer is, I'm a part of something as long as it meets my expectations, right? My preferences, what I want to get out of it. And that can be all kinds of things when it comes to fabric. It could be the coffee, which was really good this morning, by the way. Maybe our decisions about how we've chosen to handle COVID. Maybe it's the music. You know, it's whether we start or end on time, how much Bible we use or don't use, how we talk about God or don't talk about God, the cleanliness of the building, what your child did in the kids' area, stuff like that. Now, hear me on this. This doesn't mean that those things are not important issues, right? They can be very important issues. But like I was saying before, the question isn't whether your preference is a good one or not, but where it comes from. What is it grounded in? In my experience, the crux of I am fabric is this idea that if you are fabric and you aren't here, then something is missing. For instance, on a Sunday, I prefer it when there's lots of other people here. I mean, that makes it more fun for me. And if I think a lot of people aren't going to come here, maybe I won't show up. Or some person particular that I would like to have be here is here. Who's running the nest and stuff like that. And if they're not going to be here, well, then I'm less interested in coming to our gathering. But what if those people aren't just here for you, but you are here for them? Even if you don't know who they are, just your being in the seat, and not just talking about Sunday mornings, you're just being in that seat somehow affirms people here saying, I'm not the only one who thinks about these things. I'm not alone in this world with all these tough questions and these hopes and these aspirations and this willingness to be vulnerable and to deal with all that stuff. To keep this in terms of our preferences and our purposes, it might be that I would prefer to show up when everyone else makes it the way I would like it to be. But the purpose that could be behind all that would be that we inherit the world that we create. And I want to create a world in which I can thrive And I know that's going to be the same world in which other people are also going to thrive. So whether I show up or not isn't just about me and my needs. It's about the whole community and its needs. Now, I don't say this as, you know, to chastise or correct people for what you're doing. In fact, I'm unbelievably proud of the way this community continues to show up in so many ways, unlike I've seen in any other church community that I've ever been involved with. But this is just so key to us. And there's always a growing and a learning in this. And I welcome anyone to come here with any level of expectations and whatever they're looking for, whatever needs they have met. I mean, that's maybe why you came, because you had needs to be met. And the rest and how you can be valued by this community, be a part of this community, is something you gradually wake up to. But, you know, that's all fine. This happens gradually. We have learning. We have all kinds of stuff like that to figure out. There are times to step forward to be more engaged. There are times to step back. I get it, all right? And that's where I was talking about. There's this dynamic reciprocity going on. It doesn't happen because of one person. It happens because of how we all function as a community. And we play our roles when we see it. It's messy, it's imperfect, it's human-sized, and it's something, like I said, we can only accomplish as a community. But it depends on the choices, on these preferences that are born out of hard-fought, wrestled-with purposes in our lives. And not just every week, but every day, because Fabric isn't just a Sunday thing. This is when we gather together for some inspiration to go out into the world and to live our lives and figure out how to do the rest, but in all the ways that we weave our lives together. So this is very true for us as Fabric, but I also want you to think about this is really true for you in all of your relationships. Others don't just show up for you. You show up for them. You want someone else to be or something? You want someone else to be something for you? Well, there's an expression that I love. I should get a T-shirt that's made to it, and it's this, that you are someone else's someone else. Right? We all want someone else to do something, but we often forget that we're someone else's someone else. So you can chew on that a little bit. It would be nice to be a consumer of my family, my community, you know, my city, my country, my world. It's convenient to think of my relationships as being transactional, and I will put into them what I think I will get out of them. But the truth is that it's the opposite. Relationships are reciprocal, and we get out of them what we put into them. And this community is about ownership, it's about responsibility, it's about being part of, it's about taking risks, it's about being something bigger than you, but also something that is incomplete without you. And that, like I said, is that message is not a bitter pill to swallow. We'll talk about that more next week, but I really believe that that is when we begin to discover how valuable this community can be to us. So we'll be exploring our purposes and preferences these next week. Pass along to others. If there's other people that maybe could benefit from this conversation or help us understand it better, have them be with us or share the podcast with them or something like that. But give yourself some space this week to ask yourself, remember that question that Jesus had for James and John's mom? What do you want? And when you hear yourself say it, imagine deep down inside of you that voice that says, you have no idea what you're asking. Yeah, you know, that could be a good question to have. It's not a showstopper. It means you're on the beginning of a very important adventure, an adventure in search of a purpose that can drive your preferences.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wanderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.